You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Today's passage is fun because it's from a gospel we no longer actually have, but we know it existed at one point because both Matthew and Luke clearly had a copy of it right in front of them. We know both Matthew and Luke had it because they recount episodes in Jesus' life almost word for word that are nowhere to be found in Mark or John. So Matthew and Luke had the same outside source. That's why this mysterious gospel got the nickname Q, which is the first letter of the German word for source, or Quelle. Scholars agree that the Q material represents some of the earliest remembered teachings of Jesus, even older than our earliest written gospel, Mark. And that makes it even more worth paying very close attention to.
Our words of wisdom are from Matthew chapter 10, verses 5 through 14. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions.
Go nowhere among the Gentiles and enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, proclaim the good news. The kingdom of heaven has now come near.
Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. You received without payment, give without payment. Take no gold or silver or copper in your belts, no bag for your journey, or two tunics or sandals or a staff, for laborers deserve their food.
Whatever town or village you enter, find out who in it is worthy and stay there until you leave. As you enter the house, greet it. If the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you.
If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet as you leave the house or town. Truly I tell you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom or Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Don't look now. Chuck Norris is right behind you.
I heard superheroes read Chuck Norris comics.
I heard at night the boogeyman checks under the bed for Chuck.
I heard cats say they have Chuck-like reflexes. You think he's still got it?
I'll bet you a buck he catches the salt shaker.
You're on.
Hey, Chuck!
You owe me a buck.
You can't always see what's coming, but when you choose United Healthcare, finding an in-network doctor that's close to home is easy.
So what happened?
I had lunch with Chuck Norris.
United Healthcare.
Are you a member? Not of United Healthcare, but of the Chuck Norris fan club. Chuck Norris's reputation has spawned a cult of fans who, with tongues very firmly in cheek, poke fun at his tough guy image. There once was a street called Chuck Norris, but the name was changed for public safety because nobody crosses Chuck Norris and lives. Chuck Norris doesn't worry about high gas prices. His vehicles run on fear. Chuck Norris is the reason Waldo is hiding. Chuck Norris can strangle you with a cordless phone. Chuck Norris doesn't wear a watch. He decides what time it is. When Chuck Norris left for college, he told his father, "You are the man of the house now." Yeah, funny, but when you come right down to it, Chuck Norris's success has revolved around a reputation for two not-so-funny values, force and violence. His whole reputation is based on the idea that any situation can be resolved with brute force, or the threat of brute force. That's why the Chuck Norris meme is so funny, because he's a one-trick pony. He's a parody of himself. Nevertheless, the underlying worldview of violence as a solution has made him a role model for countless fans who, if not capable of unleashing their own roundhouse kick, still believe that Chuck's example is one to be emulated. So, it becomes something of a challenge when we consider our passage for today. Why? The whole thing seems rather innocuous, hardly worth any deep study. Jesus is telling his followers to live simply, right? Don't be burdened with material goods. They're only distractions on the spiritual journey. Live simply that others might simply live, as the saying goes. But that's not what the text says. We just heard Matthew's version. Listen to Luke's version. Then Jesus called the 12 together and gave them power and authority over all demons and to cure diseases. And he sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal. He said to them, "Take nothing for your journey, no staff, no bag, no bread, no money, not even an extra tunic." No staff, no bag, no bread, no money, not even an extra tunic. So? Still sounds like Jesus is saying that material things just weigh you down on your journey. But let's hone in on those first two words. No staff. Jesus isn't talking about a team of administrative assistants here. He's talking a walking stick. And for Crossan, it's almost as if the Christian life comes down to these two words, no staff. What? Crossan says it's highly symbolic. No staff is like telling people to wear a sign that says, "Available for mugging." Think about it. Even the semi-wild pack dogs outside the village come and size you up. But if you have a good, stout staff, they think, maybe not. The small-time thief, thinking about knocking you in the head, thinks, maybe not. Big staff there. So Crossan says, not carrying a staff is a programmatic, symbolic way of saying defenseless, vulnerable. We often talk about Jesus' ministry of compassion and justice. Jesus calls on his disciples to live out this kingdom of God, to carry out his program, to proclaim the kingdom of God and practice it. And according to our passage today, here's the key. Living out the kingdom of God is living undeniably, uncompromisingly, programmatically committed to nonviolence. When we observe Holy Week each year, we start with recounting the events in the Garden of Gethsemane. On Maundy Thursday, Peter unsheathes and brandishes his sword, but Jesus rebukes him, saying, "Those who live by the sword die by the sword." And as we've talked about before, in the trial before Pilate, Jesus says, "My kingdom is not of this world," which does not mean it's otherworldly. It's not of this world, but of heaven. But Jesus saying, "Look, Pilate, we don't do things the way your kingdom does it. All you know is violence. God's way is better." But hang on. This message is supposed to be about the Lord's Prayer. And this week's line is, "Lead us not into temptation." What does not carrying a staff have to do with temptation? Well, based on the historical situation of Jesus' Kingdom of God movement, Crossan suggests that we need to get over this line in the prayer as referring to superficial ideas like sexual temptation or being bad in a general sense. We have to break the grip that our puritanical culture has on us, that automatically has us assuming that temptations are about hyper-individualized purity culture favorites like sex, drinking, cards, or God forbid you use words like swell or golly gee. As Professor Harold Hill warned, next thing you know, they'll be leaving the pool hall, heading for the dance at the Armory with libertine men and scarlet women where ragtime, shameless music will grab your son, your daughter, in the arms of a jungle animal instinct. Masteria! Name your own pious hangout. It's all a distraction. Do you really think Jesus was such a prude? When you consider "Lead us not into temptation" in its historical context, you'd know that Jesus had in mind a very specific temptation and a very specific evil from which to be delivered. And that's force and violence. Sorry, Chuck Norris. We need to remember, and it can't be emphasized enough, that Jesus grew up under often ruthless Roman occupation. He was aware of both violent and nonviolent responses to Roman control. He and the rest of his fellow villagers lived with the memory of how Roman legions brutally attacked the neighboring town of Sepphoris. Contemporaries of Jesus ran the spectrum of responses to Rome, from violent zealots to totally assimilated collaborators. So, where did Jesus fall on the spectrum? In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus clearly lays down guidelines for how to live into the kingdom of God, primarily through the practice of nonviolence. No more eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, but do not resist an evildoer. If anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give your cloak as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also the 2nd mile. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And remember the Garden of Gethsemane again? When the soldiers come with their swords to arrest Jesus, what does Peter do? In all 4 Gospels, in one way or another, the disciples draw their swords in defense of Jesus. And in 3 of the versions, Jesus rejects the use of the sword. And that's because, according to Crossan, Jesus was leading a nonviolent revolution. Lead us not into temptation refers to the temptation to respond to violence in kind. Jesus rejects the use of a sword for offense and even a staff for defense. And a lot of smart people have agreed over the ages. Thomas Edison said, "Nonviolence leads to the highest ethics, which is the goal of all evolution. Until we stop harming all other living beings, we are still savages." And more pointedly, Isaac Asimov declared, "Violence is the last refuge of the incompetent." We have before us today one of the most profound teachings of Jesus, and it is so easily overshadowed by a stew of primal urges and lack of imagination. Over and over again, one of the primary characteristics of the holy revealed by Jesus is nonviolence. And in both word and action, Jesus' companions have the practice of nonviolence demonstrated to them, right up to and including Jesus' crucifixion. But what continues to be clear in our world of injustice, threats, retribution, and revenge is that if it's going to happen, if the world is to be transformed into a place of justice and peace, it has to be done nonviolently. And the way Jesus expressed this was, "No staff for defense, no sword for offense." Rising out of the violence of the British occupation of Ireland came the Community of Peace people, an organization dedicated to promoting a peaceful resolution to the troubles in Northern Ireland. One of the great unsung recipients of the Nobel Peace Prize, Betty Williams, was the co-founder of the group. She became a Nobel laureate in 1976 and died just a few years ago. She said, "Nonviolence is not the weapon of the weak. It is the weapon of the strong." Jesus' commitment to nonviolence inspired many. It was the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. who famously wrote, "The ultimate weakness of violence is that it is a descending spiral, begetting the very thing it seeks to destroy. Instead of diminishing evil, it multiplies it. Through violence, you may murder the liar, but you cannot murder the lie, nor establish the truth. Through violence, you may murder the hater, but you do not murder hate. In fact, violence merely increases hate. So it goes. Returning violence for violence multiplies violence, adding deeper darkness to a night already devoid of stars. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." If we're honest with ourselves, most of us face this choice on a daily basis. We just don't recognize it. Our true temptation is to be compromised by a culture that turns instinctively to violence as a solution for everything. Violence, even the little things. We see it every day in our current political campaigns. Not just the violent rhetoric from certain candidates, but even in our own town, with negative, hateful campaign signs, aggressive language in online forums, and even accusatory claims from Christian leaders whose self-righteous attitudes make them feel justified in condemning those they disagree with to eternal torture. Friends, every day we have the choice to intentionally practice compassion or respond with thinly veiled violence. Do I respond with hurtful words when my feelings are hurt? Do I honk or gesture aggressively when I'm cut off in traffic? Do I use violent actions or threatening speech with my partner at home or with the cashier at the grocery store? Do I lash out with righteous indignation on social media? Basically, do I follow Jesus into God's reign in the seemingly insignificant moments? Or do I give in to the violent ways of the kingdoms of this world? In other words, who's it going to be? Chuck Norris or Jesus? Force and violence or no staff? I know it's a tough choice, especially with the thought of Chuck Norris tracking you down if you answer incorrectly. But remember, as followers of Jesus, our prayer is, "Lead us not into temptation and deliver us from the evil that makes resolving human conflicts with force and violence our go-to choice." Jesus tells us, "The kingdom of God is at hand, and we are called to participate in it. Participate with God in making this the world our hearts know is possible." Be well. Don't forget, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee. The link's in the description.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.